Chapter 8. Millat and Irie, 1989 to 1990. It was the 14th of January, 1989. Millat put his wallet down in front of the ticket man. "One for Bradford, yeah?" The ticket man put his face against the glass. "Are you asking me, young man, or telling me?" "I said one for Bradford, yeah? Don't you understand English?" Millat's friends, Rajik, Ranil, Dipesh and Hifan, all laughed and moved around behind him. "Please," said the ticket man.
"Please what?"
replied Millat.
"One for Bradford, yeah?
Return, you understand? One for Bradford, chief. We're going to the protest." "That will be £75, please," said the ticket man. Millat and his friends groaned.
"You what?" they said. £75? I'm not paying that."
The ticket man shrugged.
"Well, I'm sorry, but that's the price. Maybe next time you can steal it from some old lady."
Then the man looked at the gold that fell from Millat's ears, wrists, fingers and neck. "Or you could stop here before you get to the jewellery store." The boys shouted at the man in Bengali and then began to run away.
"What did you call me?" shouted the ticket man. "Can't say it in English. Have to talk your Paki language."
Millat and his gang were a new kind of teenager. They called themselves Ragastanis and spoke a mix of Jamaican patois, Bengali, Gujarati and English. They all wore gold and colourful scarves around their heads, and everything had Nike written all over it. They believed that Allah was strong and cool and that he would fight for them if necessary, but what they most wanted was to put the bad and strong back into Bengali and Pakistani. All of them had experienced racism when they were younger and they had been attacked because of it, but no one would ever try to fight them now. As they went towards the Bradford train, they had no tickets to get on it, but the guard saw that they were trouble and he did not try to stop them. Back in Willesden, Samad was telling his wife to shut up so that he could watch the Muslim protest in Bradford on the evening news.
"Can't you understand, woman?" he shouted. "This is the most important thing to happen to us in this country ever. It's a protest for our religion. People have had enough. We have to protect ourselves. Not that you care."
"Everybody arguing," laughed Alsana. "Why can't they just talk? I say live and let live. Bengalis originally came from the West. No one is really English. No one is one thing."
"You don't know what you're talking about. Now please be..."
"Oh my God!"
screamed Alsana, the smile leaving her face. Then she kneeled in front of the television.
"What is he doing? Is he crazy? What is he doing there? He is meant to be in school. I don't believe it."
Irie Jones was now aged 15, and she was big. She did not have Clara's slim body, but had Hortense's instead. She had big breasts, a big stomach and thighs, and big teeth. She tied a sweater around her waist to make her bottom look smaller. She wore very tight knickers under her clothes. She tried everything to be smaller so that Millat would notice her. They were both 15 now, and their bodies had changed. She was a young woman, and he was a young man. But in Irie's mind, Millat had done much better than her. She was fat, had big teeth and lots of curly black hair that she could not control. He was tall and thin, with smooth skin and chocolate eyes. He also had a beautiful smile with large white teeth. She loved him, of course. But he used to shrug and say to her,
"Thing is, people need me. They need me to be Millat. Cool Millat. It's my responsibility."
And it was. Millat was famous in Cricklewood and Willesden. He was in many gangs now, all across North London. To the white boys, he was cool, a cigarette smoker and lady lover. To the Muslims, he was a hero and a leader. But under it all was always the anger and hurt, the feeling of belonging nowhere that comes to people who belong everywhere. It was this part of him that Iri and the other girls most loved.
"But you're different," Milat would say to her. "We have history. You're a real friend. Those other women don't mean anything to me."
Iri liked to believe that, that they had history, that she was different in a good way. She was thinking this now as she stood smoking with Milat while he listened to a friend of his. It was a beautiful autumn day as they stood behind the science building of Glenard Oak School. Joshua Chalfin, son of the hippie Chalfins, was standing near them with his friends. Iri was trying to get Milat to listen to her because she had heard that some teachers were coming to look for smokers.
"Mil," she said impatiently, pulling at his arm. "Not right now, Jones, but Mil.
Please, Jones, this is Hifan, old friend. I'm trying to listen to him."
The tall boy, Hifan, did not pause in his speech. He had a deep, soft voice like water. He was wearing a black suit and a white shirt and was the same age as Milat, but he had a beard that made him look much older.
"There is a war going on, Milat," Hifan said. "A war."
"Milat, it's important."
Milat turned impatiently and listened to her warning.
"It's nothing to worry about, Jones," he said and passed her his cigarette.
"They come and we run. They won't catch us."
Then the boy stepped forward.
"Good to meet you, sister," he said, holding out his hand to Iri. "I am Hifan. I am from the Kilburn branch of the Keepers of the Eternal and Victorious Islamic Nation," he said proudly.
"That's a good name," said Milat. "It's got a nice kick to it."
"Kevin," said Iri.
"We know that we have a problem with that," replied Hifan quietly. "But the name cannot be changed. It is Allah's. Anyway, to continue with what I was saying," and he turned back to Milat, "you could lead the Cricklewood branch, Milat."
Feeling sad for herself because Milat was not interested in talking to her, Iri turned and walked straight into Joshua Chalfin.
"Hi," he said. "We're in English together, aren't we? And we're in music together."
"No, we're not," replied Iri angrily. "I'm in music. You're in music. We are not there together."
Joshua's friends laughed loudly at that, but he did not seem to hear them.
"I like your hair," he continued. "Can I have some of your cigarette?"
She shrugged and started to pass it to him. Suddenly, she heard Milat shout,
"Iri, that's my cigarette!"
So she turned and gave it back to him instead. At that moment, there was a shout. They all turned to see a teacher standing behind them. 10 minutes later, the three of them were in the headmistress's office.
"I've just spoken to all of your parents," she told them, "and every Tuesday and Thursday, you, Milat, and you, Iri, will go to Joshua's house and join him in a 2-hour after-school study group. You will study maths and biology, your weak subjects, and his strong ones."
"You're not serious," said Iri.
"I am serious," replied the headmistress. "Joshua's parents are happy to do this for you. They are important, well-known intellectuals. Mrs. Chalfin writes about gardening, and Mr. Chalfin is a scientist, so I think you will learn a lot. You two are intelligent, but you're spending too much time with the wrong people and doing things that will not be good for you. This will keep you off the streets. It's people helping people. This is what we like to do at Glenard Oak."